And it is 9 a.m. in the West Coast. It is 12 noon in the East Coast, and it's 7 p.m. in Jerusalem, the capital of Israel. Today is January 23rd, 2017, and this is Orly Benny Davis with The Impossible Truth. Today we are going to celebrate and welcome our new beloved American president, Donald John Trump. And we want to wish him all the best and all the best beginning for America's sake and for the world's sake, because his success is our success. And we have also a best wishes to Daniel Benny that is there in San Francisco. And I hope he's back to Google to start showing what he got as he travel around. He teach a lot of people how to do things, but he is my son, and I wish him all the best. So happy birthday, Daniel. Then we want to check up what Donald Trump said in inauguration and think what he did and talk to the business people that he met today. And what Russia has to do with that, and we'll take it from there. All right, so let's start. Let's start with some of Donald Trump's speech in the inauguration.
Well, I want to thank everybody, very, very special people. And it is true. This is my first stop, officially. We're not talking about the balls, and we're not talking about even the speeches. Although, they did treat me nicely on that speech yesterday. I always call them the dishonest media, but they treated me nicely. But I want to say that there is nobody that feels stronger about the intelligence community and the CIA than Donald Trump. There is nobody. And the wall behind me is very, very special. We've been touring for quite a while. And I'll tell you what, 29? I can't believe it. Oh, 28. We've got to reduce it. But that's amazing. And we really appreciate what you've done in terms of showing us something very special. And your whole group, these are really special, amazing people. Very, very few people could do the job you people do. And I want to just let you know, I am so behind you. And I know maybe sometimes you haven't gotten the backing that you've wanted. And you're going to get so much backing. Maybe you're going to say, please don't give us so much backing. Mr. President, please, we don't need that much backing. But you're going to have that. And I think everybody in this room knows it. You know, the military and the law enforcement, generally speaking, but all of it, but the military gave us tremendous percentages of votes. We were unbelievably successful in the election with getting the vote of the military. And probably almost everybody in this room voted for me, but I will not ask you to raise your hands if you did. But I would guarantee a big portion, because we're all on the same wavelength, folks. We're all on the same wavelength, right? Who knows? Took Brian about 30 seconds to figure that one out, right? Because we know we're on the same wavelength. But we're going to do great things. We're going to do great things. We've been fighting these wars for longer than any wars we've ever fought. We have not used the real abilities that we have. We've been restrained. We have to get rid of ISIS. We have to get rid of ISIS. We have no choice. Radical Islamic terrorism, and I said it yesterday, has to be eradicated just off the face of the earth. This is evil. This is evil. And, you know, I can understand the other side. We can all understand the other side. There can be wars between countries. There can be wars. You can understand what happened. This is something nobody can even understand. This is a level of evil that we haven't seen. And you're going to go to it, and you're going to do a phenomenal job. But we're going to end it. It's time. It's time right now to end it. You have somebody coming on who is extraordinary. You know, for the different positions of secretary of this and secretary of that and all of these great positions, I'd see 5, 6, 7, 8 people. And we had a great transition. We had an amazing team of talent. And by the way, General Flynn is right over here. Put up your hand, Mike. What a good guy. And Reince and my whole group. Reince, you know, right? They don't care about Reince. He's a, like this political guy that turned out to be a superstar, right? We don't have to talk about Reince. But we did. We had just such a tremendous, tremendous success. So when I'm interviewing all of these candidates that Reince and his whole group is putting in front, it went very, very quickly. And in this case, went so quickly because I would see 6 or 7 or 8 for Secretary of Agriculture, who we just named the other day, Sonny Perdue, governor, former governor of Georgia, fantastic guy. But I'd see 6, 7, 8 people for a certain position. Everybody wanted it. But I met Mike Pompeo, and it was the only guy I met. I didn't want to meet anybody else. I said, cancel everybody else. Cancel. Now, he was approved, essentially, but they're doing little political games with me. You know, he was one of the three. Now, last night, as you know, General Mattis, fantastic guy, and General Kelly got approved. And Mike Pompeo was supposed to be in that group. It was going to be the three of them. Can you imagine all of these guys? People respect, you know, they respect that military sense. All my political people, they're not doing so well. The political people aren't doing so well, but you. And we're going to get them all through, but some will take a little bit longer than others. But Mike was literally, I had a group of, what, we have 9 different people? Now, I must say, I didn't mind canceling 8 appointments. That wasn't the worst thing in the world. But I met him, and I said, he is so good. Number one in his class at West Point. Now, I know a lot about West Point. And to be 1 year, a person that very strongly believes in academics. In fact, every time I say I had an uncle who was a great professor at MIT for 35 years, who did a fantastic job in so many different ways academically. He was an academic genius. And then they say, there's Donald Trump, an intellectual. Trust me, I'm like a smart person. And I recognized immediately. So he was number one at West Point. And he was also essentially number one at Harvard Law School. And then he decided to go into the military. And he ran for Congress. And everything he's done has been a home run. People like him, but much more importantly to me, everybody respects him. And when I told Paul Ryan that I want to do this, I would say he may be the only person that was not totally thrilled. Right, Mike? Because he said, I don't want to lose this guy. But you will be getting a total star. You're going to be getting a total gem. This is a gem. And I just... You'll see. You'll see. And many of you know him anyway. But you're going to see. And again, we have some great people going in. But this one is something going to be very special. Because this is one, if I had to name the most important, this would certainly be perhaps, you know, in certain ways you could say my most important. You do the job like everybody in this room is capable of doing. There can be, and the generals are wonderful, and the fighting is wonderful, but if you give them the right direction, boy, does the fighting become easier, and boy, do we lose so fewer lives and win so quickly. And that's what we have to do. We have to start winning again. You know, when I was young and when I was, of course, I feel young. I feel like I'm 30, 35, 39. Somebody said, are you young? I said, I think I'm young. You know, I was stopping when we were in the final month of that campaign, four stops, five stops, seven stops, speeches in front of 25, 30,000 people, 15,000, 19,000 from stop to stop. I feel young. But when I was young, and I think we're all sort of young, when I was young, we were always winning things in this country. We'd win with trade. We'd win with wars. At a certain age, I remember hearing from one of my instructors, the United States has never lost a war. And then after that, it's like, we haven't won anything. We don't win anymore. The old expression, to the victor belongs.
All right. You know, you can listen to the president for a long time. And after you understand where you're coming from, you can actually appreciate everything that he says, that to be truthful and honest and to the heart. For some reason, many people think that there is like a big opposition, and all this women march that they had on Capitol Hill after, you know, after the inauguration, the day after, they really surprised a lot of men, because now the men know where to find all those women, I was told that, like, you know, you don't have to go to a bar anymore. You can go to a rally and you find all the girls. Yeah, that's true. Because the good girls, usually, they go where stuff matters. Also, boys, let's talk. But anyway, there you go. Now you know where to find those girls. Thinking about Donald Trump, he definitely has a wonderful set of incredible, it looks like a Disney World, unbelievable, all princesses, you know, it was like Dallas came to Washington, or, you know, it was a new era. It is a new era in America, where you have a great family, a great-looking family, absolutely gorgeous and very polite, very educated, very smart and savvy. A credible example for humanity to watch, to see, and to be inspired by. And you know what? I am. I'm proud of them. I'm very honored. And I was thinking about that cold, and they were walking on, you know, on the street of, you know, the Pennsylvania Avenue, and you know, saying, oh my God, it's so hard and so cold, but they did it. They did it all, and good for them. So we're going to bless them with the best, because we want to have this good years to come to all the world. And once you start having the mechanics of understanding of how it's going to go, you will know what to expect. And business is not something that you, you know, you change every day. It's a mode. It's an engine. And once the engine starts working, everybody's going to be happy. And America is happier when everybody's working. The world is happy when America is doing well, because all the rest can understand. And sure enough, we might get along. You know, I believe in a good day. All those people that think that there won't be a good day, and they're, you know, and I want to tell you some reply that there was on the inauguration speech. That, by the way, this one that we just heard was the speech that was given to the CIA headquarters, which was respectably before the, you know, the tomb of people that lost their life and giving their life for the world, for the country. So it was very honorable place to give a speech. But the interesting thing about the inauguration speech, that the president, Donald J. Trump, said that he's going to exterminate the radical Islam, Radical Islam, it means that everybody that to believe that if you're not Islamist, you have no space in the world. It means all the enemy of the free world, or all the enemy of the world, because they are per definition against anybody else. And by the way, they don't get along between each other too. So the comment of the Hamas from Gaza, terrorist organization recognized by all the world as such, friends of Hezbollah, friends of Iran, and friends of all the other extreme radical Islamist group, they were offended. They said, how come, you know, you shouldn't have said that. We doesn't understand. There will be a day and blah, blah, blah. They reply to it. Well, I guess they were funny because they thought that it was talking to them. It was not. It was not talking to them. It was talking to what he's going to do to them. That's a different thing. Anyway, keep on going. One of the things that Donald J. Trump promised to do is to move the American embassy to the capital of Israel, Jerusalem. And sure enough, we found the king, the Jordanian king, meeting with the prime with a PA Abu Abbas meeting with a Palestinian Authority head. And they were thinking about measure in response to Trump's plan to move the U.S. embassy to Israel, in Israel, to Jerusalem. Now, you understand that every time people threaten head of state, it's not going to end up well, especially when you are threatening any move of USA, a US president. You have no position, king of Jordan, and the head of the Palestinian Authority that was elected in 2000 and what, and never had an election since. You have no position to even argue with what the president, the U.S. president, is going to do. Now, people would say, the United Nations will say, it's not, you know, it's not for the U.S. to decide where is Jerusalem in the world, and if it's the capital of Israel or not. And I would make a claim now. I'll make a claim that we need to call the bluff of the hour, because the king of Jordan, as the son of the King Hussein, he should have known a lot, long time ago. We're talking since 1975, when his father, King Hussein, gave all Palestinian in Judea and Samaria, then they call it the West Bank and the East Bank and Gaza Strip, Jordanian citizenship. There is no such thing as Palestinian refugee. They're all Jordanian Palestinian, if they want to call themselves like this. Now, I've been detecting it through the information, and I'm going to recall it in a minute. So let's get some music, and I'll be back after that. All right, we are back. And before the music and George Michael, bless his soul, was singing, I was talking about the fact that the Jordanian king decided to have a comment about the president-elect decision to move the embassy to Jerusalem, the American embassy to Jerusalem, the capital of Israel. Now, what is the deal? Many people will tell you that, you know, Israel is not right, they're occupying the land, blah, 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 right? Let's start talking the really, really truthful stuff that I can read to you from a tangible paper that is published on the internet, where you can find it in the Ford Library Museum. .gov. Okay, we're talking about Ford Library Museum. .gov /library/document/. I'm gonna give it to you. It's 03/14/1552753.pdf. Okay, this is a page that represent the meeting that took place in the White House between His Majesty King Hussein, Prime Minister Zaid Rafai of Jordan, of course, the U.S. had the President, the Secretary of State Kissinger, and Thomas Pickering, U.S. Ambassador to Jordan, note taker too, okay? This is the White House, time 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m., August 16, 1974. Subject, Middle East negotiation. Now, we're talking about 74 is the year, it's after the 73 Kippur War. The Kippur War was one of the worst surprise war that was given to Israel. And Israel lost a lot of soldiers then. And we still, you know, we occupied no land then. But in 1967, the war before that, Israel was going after Jerusalem to free Jerusalem, and she did, from Jordanian ends. So all this is in the mix of Jordanian will wanting to be a part of Jerusalem, but they have the excuse called Palestinian. So I'm going to call you from that page. As for Jordan, I'm quoting, we want to play our role. For years, we have had as our objective a just peace in the area. That's all nice, okay? It would give to the generation to follow a better life, which the most important thing we can leave them. Hallelujah. We hope for step to be taken beginning with Israeli withdrawal from the Jordanian territory. You hear? Jordanian territory, which the Israeli occupied since 67. You understand, by definition, Jordan has no calling to that territory, by the all words. But in this, we hear the fact that Jordanian call that West Bank Jordanian territory. And occupation since 67 include Jordanian. Okay, but now let's talk. What about those Palestinian people? As you know, we have hoped that they would withdraw a reasonable distance from the Jordan River. We have suggested 10 kilometers. But there have been a problem on all sides. Progress already achieved make further progress toward withdrawal ever more necessary. Like they're trying to convince the president that Israel has to withdraw. Now, the Jordan River is not much a military obstacle between Jordan and Israel. It is a kind of psychological barrier between the East Bank and the Palestinian. achieving an early disengagement for us is a test of whatever we get involved or not. We would like to know, sir, where we stand now. If we are not to be involved, we are prepared to turn over and our responsibility to the PLO and let them try to deal with the problem. It means like to get involved means to engage Israel or let the PLO, the Palestinian Liberation Organization. Now let's talk. Palestinian Liberation Organization, by definition, is the liberation of the Palestinian land. Palestine land, as was named by the Roman, it was the territory that encompassed also Jordanian. Jordan, Transjordanian then, and the land that Israel is on, it's Israel. And the Roman decided to call it upon the Palestine, you know, the people that were the enemy of Israel. Now think about it. When the PLO acts, it never acts against Jordanian, because Jordan is already theirs, right? Palestine, that part of Palestine is already there, they say. So their organization to liberate the rest of it, the rest of the land, which is the land of Israel. Because there is no a third entity in between Israel and Jordan. It's all Jordanian and Israel. And I'll tell you how I know that. Another set of issues for us is the PLO. I'm keep on reading from the same meeting. There has always been a dilemma in trying to define who are the Palestinians. Okay? We have a large number of them in our country, in the East Bank and in the West Bank, in our cities. You see, they call the West Bank and the East Bank their city. We have dealt with them differently from the way the Arab state have. We have granted them nationality. Say again, we have granted them nationality and given those from Gaza passport so that they can have the opportunity to work and even go outside Jordan. All right. For all those years of negotiation of we were talking about occupation, refugees. If you have a passport, sweetheart, you ain't refugee in any country. Their children can travel to receive an education, they keep on saying. They can go to the Gulf and work there to support their family. They need to have identity. Of course they do. They're Jordanian. And the president, have you made them your citizens? King Hussein, yes, they are Jordanian. Secretary Kissinger, including those working in the Gulf? King Hussein, yes, most of them are our citizens. Other Palestinians, not from the West Bank or from Gaza, are left as refugee from the Jewish area, which even under the UN partition plan would be chosen to be Israeli. Do you guys, some of these are supporters of the Palestinian. Do you understand, guys? We have Arab Israelis that become, you know, they used to be here and they become, they're born here and they become Israelis. Citizens, and they are the one in West Bank, they call it, in the Judean Samaria, that Jordan claimed that it's theirs. They're all Jordanian. Gaza is all Jordanian. Now, I was really surprised that nobody used that. So I asked one of those intellectual that we have so many of them, but for some reason nobody has a record of what stuff is going on. You know, I love this politician, but ignorance is not a blessing in politics. In politics, or you know your stuff, or you don't know, or you get somebody who knows this stuff. But please, don't try to gap in the middle. And don't try to settle any freaking I'm sorry, I'm using this word, any dispute by trying to tag it in different name. If you have a refugee, is a refugee. If he is a citizen of Jordanian, he is a foreign. He's living in a foreign land, okay? But he has a passport. So now we have a different problem. They said that the intellectual said, oh, the Jordanian, they took it back. You know how convenient. You cannot take it back. There is a rules in the refugees order and refugees law, because there is the Geneva Convention about the refugees, and it says like this: when a refugee comes to your land, you must grant him citizenship, because he has no other place to go in case there is hostility in the other land. If they have hostility, it means that they have no place to go back, so they become your citizen. So, technically, I'm sorry, technically saying, if you get a refugee, you get grant him a citizen, you cannot go back and make him a refugee, because then he becomes your refugee, Jordanian refugee. It has to do nothing with Palestine. You see, it doesn't matter which part you take it. They've been playing us like a fiddle. They've been rhetoricing. That's not a word, I know. They've been talking all this story, a fairy tale they build up, and they're holding a passport in their, you know, backpack. I can go to the Gulf War, a Gulf state, and work in Dubai. I can go to Bahrain, you know, no money there, right? Guys, quit with this Palestinian solution. America, United Nations, you are investing, I don't know, is United Nations, those all Arab, you know, countries, why they we have it anyhow. You are investing all this money to have the Palestinian question that is supposed how we get rid of Israel. Now, it's over. Israel is here to stay. You know, you did a good run, but no cigar, right? So, I'm so sorry to tell you, but your formula just got this, you know, dismantled. And I'm here, and I need to write this book someplace soon. If I'll have the chance to have a normal life, it means that, you know, in Israel, it's always running around trying to help some people and work with people and answer to some people, and everybody's complaining all the time. For what? They have a narrative that somebody bought here, half of this country believe in the BS that they've been told. Those left wings, are they the illiterate? All those academia, what have you been doing? Nobody's reading the stuff. I love what they do, but I've been, you know, this is on the record, okay? Now we have to write this book. I would love to make it a movie. Think about this movie. It's like a scene. I'm reading this. And I won't tell you even how I got to find it. I've been searching for other information. It's not even there. If you get to all those documents of the White House, you will see a movie after movie that will be a delight for History Channel and for us all, you know, movie lovers. Anyway, I think you deserve some music after all this talk.
I heard about him before. I wanted to know.
All right, we're back. My goodness, that was shaking up. Let's listen to what the Russians are up to these days.
Iran and Russia have little in common along cultural, ethnic, and religious lines. Iran is an Islamic republic, while Russia has a long history of secularism. Yet the two are close geopolitical allies for one simple reason: the United States. Conflict throughout the Middle East and Central Asia has pit the U.S. against both Iran and Russia, as all three seek greater power in these regions. So what exactly makes up the alliance between Russia and Iran, and what does it have to do with the U.S.? Well, notably, Russia and Iran have both held unfriendly relations with the United States for decades. For Iran, this began largely due to a CIA-backed coup, which replaced the appointed prime minister with a U.S.-friendly Shah in 1953. Roughly 26 years later, the Shah was overthrown in the Islamic Revolution, ending U.S. relations. As for Russia, negative and competing relations with the United States following World War II ultimately culminated in a half-century-long Cold War, lasting until the fall of the Soviet Union, although political disagreements between them continue to this day. As such, the U.S. has placed economic sanctions on both countries, most recently in Iran for violating details of an agreement on nuclear proliferation, and in Russia for the invasion of Crimea in Ukraine. In light of these sanctions, the two countries were forced to rely on each other for certain types of trade, like oil. In fact, in recent years, they've worked on an oil-for-goods deal that can be worth as much as $20 billion and would help Iran dispense with its excess of oil. Since the two share a border via the Caspian Sea, they're able to cooperate militarily as well. Russia's Collective Security Treaty Organization, which serves as an affront to NATO and features predominantly post-Soviet states, has invited Iran to join. Additionally, the two are primary founders of the Gas Exporting Countries Forum, which represents roughly 70% of the world's natural gas. Due to military sanctions against Iran, the country also relies on Russia for armaments. In 2010, a UN resolution banned the sale of missile systems and other heavy weaponry to Iran, forcing Russia to go back on a deal for long-range surface-to-air missiles. However, following completion of the Iran nuclear deal between Iran and the United Nations Security Council, the missile delivery was reinstated. The two countries also work together on security, particularly against ISIS. The so-called 4+1 coalition, made up of Russia, Syria, Iran, Iraq, and Lebanon, have shared intelligence in order to fight the terror group. However, the United States has pushed back on this coalition, saying it aids not just anti-ISIS efforts, but pro-Syria efforts, particularly by Russia and Iran. Both have been allies of the Syrian government for decades. By some accounts, Iran is more of a pawn for Russia to wield its influence rather than a fully equal partner in their relationship. One thing is certain, however, this generally favorable relationship has done plenty to rebuff the United States, while both Iran and Russia see mutually beneficial results from their alliance. Besides the 1953 CIA-backed coup, Iran has plenty of other reasons to dislike and distrust the United States. You can learn more about the history of their mutual conflict and where they stand today by watching this video.
On November 4th of that same year, protesters stormed the U.S. Embassy in Iran, and the Iranian government held 52 Americans hostage for more than a year.
Thanks for watching Seeker Daily. Don't forget to like and subscribe for more videos every day.
Thank God for this. Really, we're back. It's Orly Benny Davis with the Impossible Truth. It's, you know, I said thank God for this incredible medium that we can listen, we can talk, we can research, we can understand what's really happening. And I want to put a red flag alert on the really, really incredible story that Oracle is laying off approximately 450 employees in Santa Clarita hardware system division. The layoff, a discussion board of technology business firing, claimed about 1,800 employee company-wide are being pink-slipped. Guys, Oracle is one of those companies that struggle so hard to give the world some kind of product that will drive it to the next level, we need to support those companies. And I don't know who's listening to in the business section or in the industry, but we have, you know, we have the next generation of Solaris 12 that that was replaced Solaris 11, and I know I don't know much about it, but I know Oracle that been working so hard. I know some of the people, and the U.S. Department of Labor filed a lawsuit against Oracle in January. I can't believe the U.S. government will be also involved in helping destroy a company. All right. I hope that whoever is listening, pay attention to Oracle. Oracle is not a company that needs a shake-up. It needs to be shaked up, okay, to be helped. All right. Let's keep on going. It's Orly Benny Davis with Impossible Truth. It's Daniel's Benny birthday. And I hope he has a blast wherever he is. Well, he always have one, I'm sure. But God bless you. And I hope that we have a wonderful, wonderful start for a new beginning back again. And maybe you surprise me and make, you know, get married soon. You never know. I want to keep on going with what we have in the news. Let's listen to this.
Shalom, Israel Republicans. I'm Governor Mike Pence. It's a great honor for Donald Trump and I to stand together with you tonight in support of Israel. And I'm deeply humbled to be speaking to you at this historic time and with all of you there in that special holy place of Jerusalem, the eternal home of the Jewish people. Over the course of this campaign, many people have asked me why our ticket stands so strongly with Israel. Donald Trump and I stand with Israel because Israel's fight is our fight, because Israel's cause is our cause. We stand with Israel for the same reasons good people everywhere stand with Israel. We stand with Israel because her cause is just, because her values are our values, and because her fate is our fate. Israel is not just our strongest ally in the region. As I've said for so many years, Israel is our most cherished ally in the world. Currently, Israel lives under the ominous shadow of a threatening neighbor who seeks to wipe her off the face of the earth. Yet Donald Trump and I understand that Israel is not hated by her enemies for what she does wrong, but rather for what she does right. Like the United States, Israel is hated by terrorists and the failed states that support them. She is hated by too many progressives because she is successful and her people are free. There's one more thing that Donald Trump and I understand and will never shrink from proclaiming. Like the United States, Israel defends herself with an army of citizen soldiers who fight their nation's battles with decency, humanity, and restraint. As Israel shows the world how to turn scarcity into plenty, sickness into health, poverty into wealth, as Israel takes the curses, the slanders, and lies of the world and turns them into blessings, the real question is, how could any good person not stand with Israel? Let the word go forth from Jerusalem, the eternal, undivided capital of the Jewish people and the Jewish state, that Donald Trump and I are proud to stand with Israel. The American people are proud to stand with Israel. And should Donald Trump and I have the privilege of serving this great nation? If the world knows nothing else, the world will know this. America stands with Israel. Together, let us all pray that God continues to bless Israel and all her citizens, Jewish, Muslim, and Christian, with life, hope, and peace. May God bless you all. May God bless Israel. And may God continue to bless the United States of America.
I love this man. I'm seriously. This guy is such a wonderful man. Humanity gave us such a treasure. We're living in a good time. In a good time when you have a leader like this. America, you are a worthy people. When you deserve such a credible, incredible leader. And, you know, a new president who believes in God, the vice president that is so humble and graceful, first lady, you know, his wife, and the older children. I'm telling you, America, you're going to be proud of them. And please, I would open a parenthesis. All those people, the Democrat that wanted to demonstrate after the inauguration, I know that in the bottom of their heart, they just wanted to be there, but they couldn't without any good excuse. And it was a good excuse to show up for inauguration. We love you all, embrace you all. Yes, you showed up for the show even under a pretest. What could have you done? But thank you for showing up. Let me read a piece from the book of King David. For Solomon, O God, give your judgment to the king and your righteousness to the king's son. May he judge your nation with righteousness and your poor with justice. May mountain bear peace to the nation and hill through righteousness. May he judge the nation's poor, save the children of the destitute, and crush the oppressor. They will fear you as long as the sun and the moon endure, generation after generation. May he descend like rain upon cut vegetation, like showers, waters of the earth. May the righteous flourish in his days with abundant peace beyond the days of the moon. May he dominate from sea to sea and from river to the ends of the earth. May nobles kneel before him, and may he fall lick the dust. May the kings of Tarshish and the isles return tribute, the king of Sheba and Sheba offer gifts. May all the kings prostrate themselves before him, and all the nations serve him. Amen. That was my blessing to you guys all, to have back what you very, very well deserve, respect and love, because you are one kind of incredible nation, a place where love exists, friendship flourish, children are happy, and people are free. And it's a gift that the world needs to take page from your page. I just want to have the opportunity to teach the world about the way you are. Even far away from home, I can tell you that we miss you every day. And McDonald, far away from you, is not the same, trust me. No, I'm serious. Let's take the world back and make it better. I need a few thousands of schools around the globe just to copycat a little from what you can teach. We need in Israel, we have the center of information of all over the world. Let's get some students here, let's get some teachers here, and let's work. The world needs some work, and we can invest in the capital of humanity. That's the biggest asset of all. Never, never undermine your fellow man, because he can move the earth if he wants to. That's the world. If it's given to you, you will have it. So in that note, and in that blessing that came as I opened the Bible, I did not look for it. I didn't wait for it. I just knew I want to give you a blessing. And that, the blessing that God decided I would give it to you. And so I did. So from all my heart, with all my soul, that, you know, I cherish you so much. I want to salute you and say goodbye tonight for you to have a wonderful week and for the new president to have a wonderful, great, great year. May God bless you all. And this is from Israel, from, you know, hopefully Jerusalem, the holy city of all, come to visit. This is Orly Benny Davis saying goodbye. Ciao, ciao.